I've heard from a lot of people in the industry that are slightly scandalized as well at the use of AI agents, because the one thing, at least in IT, and maybe Cesar, you know this too, coming from the world of engineering, is, if you're green and you walk off the street and you start working for a company, the last thing they're going to do is tell you to put together some document with a bunch of references and put a stamp on it, right? I mean, the way that you grow through this is you've been there for years, you've proven your worth, you've proven your value. People can trust you. So you have this agent coming off the street, right, that no one knows, no one's ever interacted with, and the blind faith and trust is a very interesting kind of social look at what people are doing and the level of trust that people give in these agents. It's amazing.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to another episode of Nerding Out with That Nerdy Catholic. I am Seth Payne. I'm here with my co-nerd Cesar.
Hello.
And today we have a guest with us, Lee Sondeno. Lee is the director of young adult ministry at St. Victoria in Victoria, Minnesota. Welcome, Lee.
Hello, Cesar, Seth. How are you guys?
Very good.
Doing good. Before we jump into the episode, though, I want to remind you that if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates when we put out new episodes. Go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch. You can get Nerdy Catholic swag, t-shirts, mugs, and prints to show the world that you can be a nerd and a Catholic at the same time. You can go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support to help support us financially. Our expenses here at That Nerdy Catholic have gone up, and any financial support you can give us would be greatly appreciated. You can send a one-off tip or join us as a monthly supporter. So today we have a special guest with us, Lee Sondeno. I met Lee recently. He was recording an episode of The Journey Home. He came from a Pentecostal background and became Catholic. And the reason that we have him here with us today, though, is he has done a number of podcast episodes with the Practicing Catholic podcast show. And he has done a lot of research and looking into issues of artificial intelligence, especially around the area of work. And our last episode, we talked about some issues of artificial intelligence and work. And so we wanted to bring on Lee and talk about some of his thoughts and even some of his experiences that he has had in his job with issues of artificial intelligence. So welcome, Lee.
Thank you, Seth. Yeah, I really appreciate the invitation. I come from an IT background. I worked in IT for about, 18 years before I was in full-time ministry, and kind of saw everything leading up to the AI movement. And so this is near and dear to my heart too, because I've seen the effects of it on people that I know, but I've also seen some of the amazing misinformation that's just being thrown around that you and I have talked about as well, that I think would be fun to maybe dive into today, that we can start to dissect what this really means for the working class people, what it means for especially people in the IT industry, that I would be really interested in talking about, because I think we saw these, big shifts over the last couple of decades of sort of this movement to information technology and the importance of those roles in companies. And now we're kind of seeing that all unravel. And what does that mean? Where are these people going to go? all of those fun things. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and one of the reasons I love doing these shows is, Cesar comes from an electrical engineering background. I come from a programming background, moved into more video production, and you now you come from an IT background. And so we're not theologians speculating about information technology issues.
Yeah.
We're nerds that love talking about technology and are coming from a Catholic perspective. So I think that's a really interesting angle.
Yeah.
And so in general, we go into very nerdy topics, but then we bring in our faith from here to there to see how it all works together.
Right.
I want to start off with the experience you had at work with this AI document. I think this will be a good jumping off point because it's a great story.
Yep.
And I think we can get a lot from it.
Well, you both know, and Seth, as a programmer, everything you do is test but verify everything.
Yes.
Especially when it comes into IT. And maybe we'll get to this too, and I've got some fun quotes to share with you on some of this. But So I worked for a company that was charged with creating an AI policy because there were some questions around its use in education, its use in kind of lower level grades in high school. How should kids be using it? How should people be interacting with it? What is the allowed, I guess, level of use of AI versus natural learning and things like that? So naturally, the powers that be asked an AI agent to create an AI policy. And they asked the AI agent to create an AI policy based on Vatican documents. So they wanted to go into a couple of documents that I'm sure you'll hit on in the next couple of weeks on some of your podcasts that the Vatican has talked about regarding AI and its use. And it was a really good looking policy. I mean, it was solid. The language was really good. Of course, we're all familiar with this, right? People love ChatGPT because they say, look, there's links to sources. All of these sources are legitimate. So it must be real information. So being the nerdy Catholic that I am, I went through these sources and found out that they were completely fake. Wow. The AI agent, yeah, Cesar, I haven't told you about this one, but the AI agent had completely hallucinated. And so not only had it pulled separate Vatican documents where the strings of the URLs looked legitimate, but it didn't go to anywhere, but there are some specific quotes in that document that it was pulling from a Vatican document where those quotes, if you were to look for them in the document, they don't even exist. They don't even exist. So there were two different layers of hallucination.
Some of the documents were real, but the quotes
Correct.
Pulled from them were not.
Correct. Wow. So one of the documents that it was referencing is a very real and a very good document that you could have used for an AI policy. But when you look at the quotes that were used by the AI agent, they do not exist in the Vatican policy. Not even close. I was completely scandalous. Well, it affirmed my test but verify. But it was also a really interesting point because I think the level of trust, you know, that people have in these AI agents to kind of say, well, yeah, there's references attached to it and it's quoting things from a document, but not to verify these things is really crazy.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my favorite quotes, I'll read it because it's in this vein, is people have a very high degree of trust in ChatGPT, which is interesting because AI hallucinates. It should be the tech that you don't trust that much. So do either of you know who said that?
No.
Sam Altman, the guy who created ChatGPT.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, he's even admitting, right?
There have been some really interesting quotes from Sam Altman about not trusting, about it's like the one that's behind all of this is the one who has been quoted to say, you have to be careful.
Yeah, that's right. It should be the tech that you don't trust that much. AI hallucinates. I mean, this is...
Well, you know what it feels like? I'm sure we've all worked with a coworker that has such bravado and such confidence that they'll say something or they'll do something at work and you will feel like, or you will think, wow, that was amazing. This guy knows everything. And you can very easily give this person a lot of responsibility. And then at some point, something happens and you say, wait a second, this guy has been making all this stuff up all along. He has no idea what he's talking about. He is just playing the part and doing it really well so that people will trust him and he will get promoted and make more money. But he really doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you brought up that point because I've heard from a lot of people in the industry that are slightly scandalized as well at the use of AI agents. Because the one thing, at least in IT, and maybe Cesar, you know this too, coming from the world of engineering is, you know, if you're green and you walk off the street and you start working for a company, the last thing they're going to do is tell you to put together some document with a bunch of references and put a stamp on it, right? I mean, the way that you grow through this is you've been there for years, you've proven your worth, you've proven your value, people can trust you. So you have this agent coming off the street, right, that no one knows, no one's ever interacted with, and the blind faith and trust is a very interesting kind of social look at what people are doing and the level of trust that people give in these agents. It's amazing.
I wonder if there is something around the words large language model, which says that thing will say something, dominates the language, but it doesn't say large language knowledge. I mean, it doesn't necessarily know. And one of the experiments that Seth and I did I think that one or two episodes before we'll try to say to one of the small AI agents, I think Olama, one of them, to try to write a code for something. We both know how to code, and that code was, let's say, around 30 lines, but doing some things extra that doesn't need it looks nice, but the simplified code was like 8 to 5
lines. Like 3 or 4 lines,
and
yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
And it was something that we knew how to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. Just in the, I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal that just came out a couple of days ago that talked about AI isn't lightening workloads, it's making them more intense because the technology is increasing the speed and density and complexity of the interaction between people and the AI agent. And so to your point with the coding, you just said, Seth, you're like, we knew how to do it.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
So for you, it would have taken a couple of seconds. Now you're throwing an AI agent in there. You're throwing it a prompt. Maybe the prompt is wrong. So you're doing it again. Maybe you have to do it again, right? You finally get some spit out, right? Then you're having to verify this thing. So the thing that was supposed to make the task easier and would have been easier for you has increased it by double or triple the amount of time.
Yeah. I think one of the big issues, and after, I don't know how long this series on ethics is going to go on for, because there's so many topics that we have to touch on in this, but the next series that we're going to go into after ethics is we're going to dive into the metaphysics behind AI. But a lot of those topics are touching into this series right now. And I think that one of the big issues is the disconnect of understanding of what AI is for most people and people that understand how computers work. I feel like it's almost seen as magical by a lot of people, that here is this little person in a box and you can just ask it anything and it will answer you. And if you don't know anything about the answer it's giving back, to be able to check to see if it's real or legitimate or functional, whatever you're asking it for, you can say, oh, this is great. Here's this smart little person in a box, and they gave me the answer that I need right away. My question could have been really poorly worded, but it was able to understand it and give me something.
Your person in a box reminded me of a couple of years ago when AI just started out. And I think when you and I were first having conversations and I was saying, look, coming from IT, AI is just an absolute glorified automation process and a bad one at that. It's not even that good. You just reminded me of the Mechanical Turk. I think people should look this up. So it was a chess playing automation. Have you heard of it? Back in the 1700s and 1800s, right? And you know, these people are playing chess with this automation machine, and it's amazing because it's always winning. And they're like, how is this happening? And to your point, Seth, they would say, this is magic. You know, this is incredible. This machine knows everything. And it just happened to be a guy in a box, right? That was a really good chess player. And he was fooling everybody, right? You know, and I think AI is, of course, every week we talk about this, something is progressing and changing. But that was my first response to AI is, oh, this is just, you know, it's taking something Seth, you know, and Cesar that the three of us would have done. And it's kind of ingesting this thing as its own and it's spitting it out to somebody else. It's stealing our work, right? It's not really doing anything new. It's us behind the scenes. It's only as good as the information that we're giving it. I think technology is advancing in a weird way where hallucinations are starting to take that over and people are starting to trust the thing more. So the answers may not even be correct, but I think at its base still, I would say that AI, some sort of level of this automation tool and being such a magical tool that people can give up their normal day jobs because they're just the enchantment of this thing being done so quickly. And it looks real. I mean, if I'm not a programmer and I'm like, hey, program this the way that, you know, Seth Payne would have programmed it and it looks just like your coding, I'm like, that's magic. And you're like, but I wouldn't have done that.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Well, and Cesar, you've mentioned this before that there have been examples of companies that have fired a bunch of programmers because they said, oh, we now have this AI that can write all of our programs for us. And then they had to rehire them back.
Yeah. One of the biggest ones is Microsoft. And that was all over the news there, no? They have to rehire because it's not that AI can do the work, it's that it is a tool. And that's the thing that nobody seems to understand. It's a very good tool. It's not a very good person. It's not a very good thinker, but it's a very good tool in the hands of somebody who knows. Simplify their life if that can be adapted to the person that use, but it's not a replacement. And that is the trick that I think companies, big companies, I'm mentioning Microsoft just because it's all over the world, but there are many companies that trust AI on doing some things, but yeah, trust replacing people. And you cannot replace knowledge, you cannot replace experience, you cannot replace the feel of how this product is going to go to the hands of our customers, how our customers going to feel about that, no? With some agent that knows how to talk, I mean, knows quote unquote, no? And I think we have to be careful as how AI is presented, no? And as we said, it's a very, very good tool. And in one of our episodes, we understood under the hood was the mathematics behind AI, no? The complex and great math and matricial operations are under the hood of AI, but that's it. That's a great tool and nothing else.
That's where the misinformation hype comes in too. I loved your example of Microsoft, because I think people tend to ride this wave of, well, AI is replacing a bunch of jobs, and it's because of AI agents that we're firing all of these people. And I think executives are getting sucked into that too, this promise of some sort of utopic work society where they've only got like one agent and all the CEO has to do is push a button or ask it what to do, and he's got all the work being done for him. But here's an example of Microsoft and more recently Meta. So Meta, you know, I think in the next couple of days or maybe toward the end of the month, they announced they're laying off 8,000 people. And the whole reason behind laying off 8,000 people, if you guys read that article, was because of AI. You know, Zuckerberg basically came out and said, we're not only concentrating on AI, but AI is replacing this amount of workforce and people. And I really think, you know, we should fact check this for sure in the next couple of years, but I really think that's a bunch of hype too. Meta doubled the count of workers that they had between 2020 and 2022. I mean, they hired over 40,000 people. Wow. So they went from 40,000 to 80,000 workers between 2020 and 2022. What you're seeing is you're seeing a whole IT industry bubble that's starting to, you know, right itself, because of course, back in 2020, everyone is hiring like crazy because we're transitioning to this kind of digital universe that we were all living in. And you're seeing the right sizing now of these industries. And so even to take it down by 8,000, he's barely clipping the surface of hiring 40,000 people between 2020 and 2020, you know. And so you hear all of this hype of, oh, these people are all being fired because of AI. And I would just encourage people, well, start looking at the history of these companies. Microsoft did the same thing. They hired a ton of people and they were seeing a lot of layoffs and they were putting it under the guise of, oh, it's because of AI. I really don't buy it.
I would assume that's because of the misunderstanding that most people have of AI.
Yeah.
I think it's so easy to blame a lot of things on AI today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the hot topic that you can.
Yeah.
And that's what shareholders expect, right? Oh, investments in AI. This is where the world is moving. Mm-hmm. That's what,
well, yeah, you
know, that's what people are trying to say.
Yeah. The number of times that a company came out and said that it is now doing AI, even companies that had nothing to do with technology have been coming out and saying, we are now using AI, and their stock has quadrupled.
Yeah, Home Depot, just a couple of days ago. Well, we're creating a chatbot agent for, it's Home Depot. I mean, of all places, right, to use an AI agent.
Yeah. I think there's a thing, and thank you, Lee, for that example, because I would draw kind of a line and distinction between the technology companies like Microsoft, like Meta, and all other companies. No? Because in the case of Microsoft and Meta, we have at the CEO level people that really understand the technology. And that's my humble and personal opinion. No? I think the hype from them is just to get the value up. No? So that's why they kind of manipulate the information. But in other cases, for example, I was working in a glass container factory before, and the problem I see, because they went through this also AI hype, the problem I saw is that it used to be that at the top level, there was somebody that knows about the process and about how to manufacture and a deep knowledge of industry per se. No? Right now, at the top of the level, there's always somebody from financial background, or for commercial background, which is good because they're selling, but not necessarily understanding the technology. So they will see the big tech companies and how they are trending. And because they say, oh, those big tech companies are trending this way, then I'm going to follow that because, man, those are the big tech companies. No? So
that's absolutely right. They're just riding the wave.
I want to go back to something we were talking about a few minutes ago, thinking about this idea of AI as a magic person in a box and looking at all the examples of companies, especially thinking about coding, who fired people assuming AI could write all this code and realizing that they had hired them back to debug the code.
Right.
I think the distinction that we need to think about for how AI works, you know, I think about how we use AI for our editing and publishing process for our videos here. And so thinking about using AI to help write our descriptions for our videos. So I will take the transcript of the recording of an episode that we do. I will feed that into AI and say, here's what we talked about. Give me a summary. And it will give me a summary. And then I'll take that. And I'll say, oh, this is really interesting. I don't really like the direction it went here. I'll probably do it, you know, at least 4 or 5 times with different prompts. And then I will edit it to make sure it's correct, make sure it sounds right. For the most part, it's really good. And I think this goes back to the question of AI as this magic box versus automation. If you take some text, let's say you write a paragraph, and this is, I've also used it like this before. I write a paragraph. Here's something I want to say. I will feed it into Gemini or ChatGPT. I'll say, okay, will you improve the language in this for selling a product? Or will you reword this to get someone excited to watch this video? I'll say something like that. And it will reword it. And I'll probably go through it a few times. Versus someone that says, write me 2 pages about this topic.
Yeah.
If you start with something that you know and you feed it in and you get something back, then you can read through it and say, well, does this make sense or not? If you assume that it's this magic person in a box and you just ask it a question without knowing what comes out, if it's correct or not, or you know how it sounds, and you just use it, you know, the example you used of the policy document, then you might be lucky and get something great, but many times you're going to get something that's gibberish.
Well, and I was talking to one of those Microsoft programmers that was released by Microsoft, and he always jokes that he fired himself because he was over a lot of the AI engines that Microsoft is using. But you made a really good point, Seth. It's all about the question, right? And I think when you have the sophistication to ask the right question, the automation of the tool is a really good one, and it's a really good starting point. I used to do a lot of web development. I think one of the most mundane tasks I ever had was having to build web pages that I can tell an AI agent, hey, this is the color I want, this is the font I want, this is the look and feel I want to go for in it. And it creates it is wonderful because it saves me a ton of time. And there's some problems with it still, but it is a real time saver. But again, I was a web developer. I know the questions to ask. You know, I know the things that I would run into if it were done incorrectly that would cause a lot of headache later on if it weren't constructed the right way. So I think you're hitting on a really important point. And maybe even with these companies that are starting to use AI agents and bringing them in just for the bottom line versus having an IT person there that knows what they're doing, is they're causing a little more problems than it's even worth because they don't know what they're doing, but it's the blind trust, right? It's the blind trust behind it that I think is causing most of the issue.
Yeah. Well, and this makes me think of back in the 90s, thinking about web development. Back in the 90s, I was doing a lot of consulting, doing websites for different companies. And I started off, I think, version 1.0 of Adobe Dreamweaver. Used Dreamweaver for years and years. And I don't remember what version it was that they came out with their visual editor. But I remember working in that. And then I knew someone that was doing the same job, but he was using, I can't remember the name of it. It was a Microsoft product that created web pages and had a visual interface to But I remember one day comparing the code that Dreamweaver created and that the Microsoft product created. And the Microsoft code, the file was, I think, 3 or 4 times as big because the code that it spit out was terrible. It was like dozens of nested tags and all these definitions. And
yep.
The Dreamweaver code was pretty clean. I still had to go in and tweak the code after I used it. And most of the time, I just worked in the code and not in the visual. But if you know what it's supposed to look like, even though you aren't writing every single line, if you know what it's supposed to look like, you can say, well, this is inefficient. Like the example you're using before about what we did a few episodes ago, writing something that we could have written in code in 5, 6, 7 lines, and it spits out 30 lines of code. But if you don't know any better, mm-hmm. It's like, well, this is great. Look at all the code it just wrote.
That's a really great point. So it's almost like comparing AI to some sort of software development. You know, you've got mm-hmm. one company that really has the good entry, you know, into the software and whoever's mm-hmm. behind the scenes creating that software. And it's a fantastic tool like Dreamweaver. And then you've got, I think was it FrontPage is what you're
Front
probably
page,
thinking
yes,
of.
FrontPage, yes.
You know, yeah. And I remember using FrontPage and I was like, awful. This is bloated. And yeah, right. But it was part of competing into this arena and they just didn't understand it. And I think you're seeing that between some AI models too and some chatbots where some are really good and then some are like, wow, this is a mess. And really, does it have to do with just the entry? Does it have to do again with the person in the box truly behind the scenes that's creating this thing and their knowledge mm-hmm. instead of just ingesting all of this random information and trying to spit it out? Because again, we can't forget AI is a little bit of a different animal because we're dealing with such a high level of hallucinations. And if it's getting positive feedback constantly, then it's going to cause some issues too. I think that's a really good point, though, and I've been thinking a lot about that, is the hallucination level, because as long as the AI agent can get a positive response from its user, it's going to think it's producing the correct information, and it's going to continue to use that correct information. And then you're just off on a completely wrong sort of road when you're just not having the correct checks and balances. So put this in the hands of a non-IT person, and mm-hmm. and they'll destroy it. Because they'll always think, yeah, this is the right thing. And it's really not. And these AI agents need to be careful with that information as well, which I think is what contributes to hallucinations.
Yeah,
I like your idea, Lee, about, I was thinking a lot about what you said just a little minutes before, that it's crazy, like people start to trust these AI models, the AI bots. No? The word that clicks my mind is trust. Mm. I mean, is it because maybe executive or people that make the decisions are trusting more on an agent than their people that they work with, that the people are part of the organization? And what I see, for example, is that companies that are going up fast is because they have a cohesive team that they trust each other. Mm. And on the other hand, that companies that are big and takes some time to stay there, are starting to lose trust in their own people. And then when you think, oh, in their mind, they might say, no, oh, I have this AI, I will tell them what to do, and this AI bot is going to give me what they want, and I can trust it. No.
Yeah, maybe because it's a machine, they think, oh, well, this machine's not going to lie to me. If I have some employees I'm not sure I can trust, they might be lying to me. But this is a machine. A machine can't lie. A machine is just going to give you an answer. So I can trust this machine better than I can trust a person.
If this were the Industrial Revolution, truly, you know, back in the early 1900s, that's true. I mean, the conveyor belt's moving. The cogs are spinning. It's just such a black and white thing. And there's a high level of trust in machines like that because it's producing what you're telling it to produce. And nothing more, nothing less. I think what's happening with AI is it's producing things that are completely bogus and people don't know about it. So it's starting to deviate even between its sort of black and white metric. I bet you if you were to, well, and maybe this is an experiment that you guys did, I'll have to watch that past episode. But if you were to ask the same AI agent over and over, you know, with maybe a little bit of time in between, how often does the code change for the same question, right? And so I think what you're seeing there is it's not this cookie cutter, you know, we're making the same thing out of a factory every single day and we're all on the same page. It's all over the place. And I think that's part of why some executives, you know, these AI agents have flat out said, we're not really sure what our AI agent is doing. it's kind of just out there and it's making up its own mind. And sometimes it's right. And most of the time it's wrong. But you know what, Cesar, to your point, these big companies, right, they're trying to sell a product. And what sells a product the quickest? It's trust. And once you have trust behind a product, people are behind it 100%. So of course, you know, the chorus they sing is always going to be, oh, we trust this thing 100%. It's going to make your life easier. It's always going to spit out the right things. And I think you're seeing some competition between the people that are using it versus these executives that are really trying to paint this picture of trust and perfection with the product that they're trying to sell.
Yeah. One of the things I want to look at some point is all of the quotes that have come out from experts in AI, especially someone mm-hmm. like Sam Altman, of the warnings. Because even in the warnings, even in their warnings about how dangerous AI could be, they're still painting a picture of this super intelligent magic person in a box. And even the warnings are building up so much hype about how powerful AI is that people are assuming that anything that happens is because AI has done this amazing thing. It seems backwards, but it's still pushing the hype of AI.
It is, because remember, the more that people use it, the more sophisticated it's getting. I mean, we're all, you know, not to sound super doonish, but we're all a part of this scheme to get more information into the AI models. I was reading a couple of quotes that I was mentioning before the show, but if, you know, one that I always love to look at is, I'll just read this really quickly. If we turn now to things external and material, the first thing of all to secure is to save unfortunate working people from the cruelty of men of greed who use human beings as mere instruments for moneymaking. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're seeing a lot even of AI is they're using these, you know, this is free, start using it, start prompting it, start asking questions, start agreeing with it because it's just making the models and the AI agent more and more sophisticated. By the way, that quote was from Rerum Novarum written in 1891 about the Industrial Revolution, not about our current climate with AI. But you're seeing again this issue of, you know, using people that are unaware and using humans in a softer way. Right? We're not bringing people to factories and we're not causing disparity with working conditions yet, right? But we are bringing people into these models in a very soft, sophisticated way where they think they're doing something of value for themselves when really all they're doing is feeding these machines and these conglomerates. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait for Pope Leo's next encyclical to come out to compare with Rerum Novarum because I have heard so many people talk about the growth of AI as such a good thing without really thinking about the people that are behind it.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And also thinking about, I saw a video recently looking at the current state of the S&P. People are talking about, it's like, well, the economy is growing. Well, the economy, if you look at the value of the top seven AI companies, they're shooting through the roof. If you look at the rest of the economy, it's stagnant at the moment. And so our economy is currently being propped up by these seven companies. And these seven companies are all investing in each other, passing around all these billions of dollars that aren't really billions of dollars. If you look at Microsoft investing in all these companies, they're not giving $2 billion to other companies. They're saying you can use $2 billion worth of our software, or NVIDIA passing chips around, or people that are creating all these hosting companies say, you can use this much money's worth of our server time. There's not money going into the economy. It's all this money, this digital fake money that's being passed around to these companies to make it seem like there's all this money being pumped into the economy. And at the same time, you have most companies not being able to hire new people or even having to lay off people because they're not growing.
It's interesting. They're really creating a world. Yeah. You know,
and they're becoming super rich at the same time.
Right. They're becoming super rich. Well, and it's just creating that the chasm is getting bigger and bigger between, you know, the reality that we're seeing in the world versus this kind of digital version that that we're creating. And maybe the parallels aren't super clean, but it does remind me a little bit of Ready Player One, which is a fantastic book.
Yes.
You know, because you're seeing this perfection of a world in virtual reality and all of the money there, and it's all digital currency and everything else. And then of course, once you take the virtual reality off, you've got trailer parks that are stacked on top of each other, and you know, crime is rampant. And that's almost a nice view of, you know, what happens when all of this money, you know, and energy and all of the interest, you know, is pushed into some sort of technology. And the rest of the world is kind of saying like, well, what's going to happen to the working class people? What's going to happen to the plumbers and the electricians and everything else? And well, they're not part of the machine, right? And people aren't interested in that. It's not helping sell our product. And then you're seeing this kind of disproportionate look on the working class, which is really what I'm interested in that you and I were talking about, is what does this mean for the working class? You know, if you're a student right now in high school, you're going into college, maybe you were interested in the IT field a couple of years ago, you know, that's out the window because, you know, there's just not a lot of jobs right now unless you're trained in AI, and it's kind of just a, where do you go? I was reading another article, I think in the Wall Street, that was talking about this, where there's companies now that for the interview, they're sitting you down and seeing how you interact with the AI agent. Like, how are you as a person interacting with our agent?
Wow.
And that's going to be a model of what type of employee you can be with our organization. It's batty.
One of the things that I'm thinking is that, and I'm wondering if it's going to be a hype, like a bubble, like there was in the 2008. Remember the dot-com bubble that suddenly burst and we go back to the reality there? Because, you know, in the end, we will always need the plumbers. We will always need people that, hey, my AC is not working. Well, I can do whatever I can do in AI, but if it's a cold winter, you know, your heat system is not working, you're going to feel it. You're going to need somebody to. So these things right now, I think it's kind of like a fashion, like a trend, no? But we have to remember that we always will be needing the workers to get our houses set, the farmers to get our food. You know, AI is not going to grow any food. It's not going to grow any cattle, no. That's us. We need to do that. Otherwise, we will have nice computers and nothing to get in our mouth. So,
So I've heard people recently talking about looking at a different way to measure the health of the economy other than the GDP, because the GDP takes the full value of everything in the economy.
That's
and
right.
It says, and then if you do per capita, you say, well, let's just take the total value and then break it down per person. And that doesn't look at the people on one extreme, the high end, and the people on the low end. That just bundles everything together. So if you look at the GDP and say, well, our economy is doing great. But if you have the value of the economy in 2% of the people,
that's right.
Then you can't look at it and say, well, this is great, even though most people are struggling.
Right. I think, Cesar, your point too is really interesting. I've reflected on that too. AI is really an assault on the expert, you know, however we consider ourselves as experts, whether we're programmers or engineers and IT people. And I always go back to farmers because I think, well, there's no way, you know, that AI would be able to do what a farmer does and till the soil and things like that yet. But I think what's interesting about it is as you're increasing knowledge, you don't need the experts anymore. And then the person that was farming that's the expert because they know the soil better, they know the sun rotation better, they've been doing it in their family for 180 years or whatever it is, all of a sudden becomes almost obsolete because you're able to plug in some sort of model or program that's able to show you like, yep, you plant this thing exactly at this point in time and it knows enough about conditions and scale that it's able to do what it needs to do. I think that's maybe the more worrying thing for me is, at what point does your air conditioning break and you ask the model, how do I fix this myself? And I have then become the expert, right? And I've only become the expert through the transition or the transfer of knowledge through this AI agent. And so what happens to the experts, right?
Yeah.
No, that's a good thing. And the other thing that we have to think, and I hope that, for example, if I am consulting something like repairing in the air conditioning there, you have 440 volts there. I hope the AI doesn't hallucinate. That's
know,
my only hope.
Exactly.
I mean,
right. Well, exactly. Because you've got a lot of electricians putting in some false information, saying, "Oh, go ahead, touch it.
Yeah,
it'll be fine."
I'm sure it's off.
I'm sure it's off, right. Assuming it's off because you are an expert, go ahead and continue with this process.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
that's a good point.
You know, as we're talking, Lee, I'm coming up with other conversations I definitely want to have with you. But the one that has come to my mind is that I would love to go into, and I think looking into Rerum Novarum is part of it. The value of an expert is not just what an expert can do, because you can't just look at the value of an expert to the economy or to a
Correct.
Company. You need
right.
to look at the value of an expert to themselves. If
That's right.
if I know how to do something and I know how to do it well, you know, I am sure we all have this role that we are the IT person in our family. We are the person
yep.
that all of our family members come to. It's like, hey, this isn't working. The best example, very funny example. My mom called me. It was a number of years ago, back in, I think it was in the late 90s. And she was on her Windows computer. She was doing something. And she called me up and she was panicked. She's like, "Seth, I'm kind of worried." I'm like, "What?" She said, I'm worried that the police are going to come." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "I was doing something on my computer and this window popped up and said there was an illegal operation." And she was worried that a message was sent to the police because she did something illegal. I'm like, "No, Mom, that's just the way programmers say it when something breaks." But the feeling that we get when we are able to help out our family members, it's like, oh, you know, it's like, this is my expertise. And I've been able to, either in my work or helping someone out in our family, we have gained so much value. Like, we feel valuable because we are able to help someone. So if you take the expertise off of the person and put it on a machine, where are we going to get our value from? And if you think about that compared to Rerum Novarum looking at the Industrial Revolution, it was the same
right.
question.
It
if
was
you
the same
turn people
question.
Into cogs,
right?
And there in the Industrial Revolution, it was standing in front of a sewing machine or standing in front of some piece of machinery, hit buttons, pull levers so that the machine can make something. And now it's just
right.
doing the same thing with computers.
Right.
You know, the funny thing
right.
about that is that when you think about that, the operator that put the board on, switched the lever, that was the continuum on a normal workday. But at some
yep.
point, that machine breaks.
Yeah.
And the worker there, that it's been a long time, they knew, oh, this machine always breaks because this belt, because this, you know, this tweak. And they start knowing the machine. And that's something that industries that haven't been appreciated really. But the value of the worker that knows the machine when that worker goes out and there was no transfer knowledge, it's a very good hit to the company, no? And I see this because I have been working in manufacturing for some years there, and I'm right now doing some consulting to another manufacturer, and the problem they have is the rotation, no? So in a normal day, let's say 80% of the time, you do the automatic things. But the 20% yeah. of the time that it doesn't, you have to change something, it goes down. And the people that knows, oh, this is because of tack, 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 they really know the machine intimately, that's when they get the value, and that's when people in the higher up doesn't see. And I think because that's not a repetitive action, if we put that into an AI, how do you get that knowledge from experience from years that, you know, it has been a flash here, a flash here, a flash here of time when, you know, that person see, oh, what's going on in the machine, dives in the machine, find the problem. That knowledge is not transferable by an AI agent, no? You have to extract that knowledge from the person.
Yeah.
And I see that, and I see most of the companies right now, it's getting hard from them starting to extract that knowledge. And I mean, not the knowledge of how to normally operate the machine, but what do you do if something happens? That's
yeah.
the knowledge that is going to be hard, I think, for AI to grasp.
this is where the parallels of the Industrial Revolution and what we're seeing today are just really exciting to talk about, even with Ramanavaram, because I think I was mentioning to you, Seth, offline, that The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, right, that talks about just the horrors of the meatpacking industry in Chicago during the Industrial Revolution and the exploitation of immigrants and workers and things like that. I mean, Cesar, think about the time that it took from the start of the Industrial Revolution and the blind trust in these machines and all the exploitation that was happening of its workers until they got to the point to say, oh, these workers are valuable because they're keeping the machine running, mm-hmm. not just standing there waiting for the, you know, being a part of the machine. They were actually the ones that were helping maintain it. But the length of time that it took to get there, and I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface on people understanding the same problem with AI. Right? It's this blind trust thinking we don't need the interaction with other humans or other capable people like, you know, the three of us that would be able to program or say this is the wrong direction or whatever it is. And what does that look like? And is it going to be another 20, 30 year journey like it was for the Industrial Revolution to where Ramanavaram comes out from the Catholic side of perspective to say, hey, your working conditions are terrible and we're exploiting human beings because of the machine. And those parallels are really interesting.
Yeah, and I like that point about gained knowledge on the job.
Right.
Because as you said, Cesar, the people that worked the machines, there were some people that just stood there and hit the buttons and pulled. But there were some of the people that, as you said, they would say, okay, if it breaks, here are the top three things I need to check first. I always see that this belt breaks or that this gear needs some more grease on it and the knowledge that's built up on the job is so much more valuable than the knowledge you studied before you got the job. Because the knowledge that you've studied before you got the job, that's all theoretical and it's all usable, but it's not as useful as the knowledge that you gain when you're doing the job. And there's a part of that that is built into our human creativity. We put these things together in our mind and say, oh, okay, I see that that's breaking over there. I should check something over here to see what the connection is. And if you're firing people because you think a machine's going to take their job, as you said, Cesar, you're losing all of that knowledge.
Right.
Yeah, funny thing is that the knowledge of experience kicks you just 10% of the time, because especially in automation, machines works one way, but when that event happened, when that glitch happened, when something's out of the normal, that's when you need the expert, and that's when AI fails. And I think that people are starting just right now to realize that. No, I think we have to take that into account.
That's a great point. And maybe at some point, the mistrust that's happening now with people understanding what is going on with hallucinations and things like that to protect their investment. These companies are bringing these people back in because they're starting to realize that, hey, this is a risk and we need to build that trust back up. I think there's Sam Harris, I don't know if you've heard of him, but the Center for Human Technology, I think he's brought up some important points about this that we should talk about at some point in the future, is that idea of, you know, we're in the car just accelerating, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no braking, there's no turn signals. And
it's just one big gas pedal,
right? And I think it's the idea, because we've seen this in the Industrial Revolution, and that's why we're also excited to see what the Vatican and Pope Leo are supposedly going to come out with pretty soon about, you know, this AI technology that we have today, you know, in comparison to the old Ramanavaram, is do we have a chance to build in a brake pedal? You know, do we have a chance to build in these turn signals to where we're not just going down this direction where we're gonna run into the same problem that we did with the Industrial Revolution, where it was exploitation of human beings at the expense of the machine until we had to unravel all of that, you know, with greed and everything else? Is do we have a chance to get ahead of that, or are we just kind of sitting back and watching this thing happen? You know, that's gonna be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a good stopping place for right now. As you said, Lee, there's a lot of areas that we can go in. We'll definitely have you back, because I think that this is such an important conversation to have right now. One of the things that has been going around in my mind that I would love to have a conversation with you about, the three of us, is I love that you brought up Ready Player One. because I think a really interesting comparison would be look at two possible futures with AI, Ready Player One versus Star Trek. You know, Ready Player One, where you have this separation of wealth, where you have most people living in, as you said, you look at the images, and I saw the movie a few months ago, finally. It took me a while, but of Ready Player One, that you have these stacked up trailer parks of the masses living in this poverty versus Star Trek, where you have the creation of the replicator, and then it brings about this utopia where people, this is doing all the work, so people can go off and study art and whatever you want to do, you can do whatever you want because all of your basic needs are being met. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the image that is being sold right now with AI, is this is going to create a utopia. But we need to realize that that's not the only possible future. So I definitely want to look into that at some point.
That's a great point. It'd be interesting to see what kind of controls are in place in the kind of Star Trek universe that are causing the machines to operate how they should, right? Because we all know those episodes where, the computer just went haywire.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And what are those controls that were in place? And I think more importantly, there's always kind of an understanding between the value of humanity in the Star Trek universe versus what was digital and what was computer. And that's what made that show so beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it was really the human elements of all of these things that were coming out on top. And like Cesar said at the beginning of this episode, AI was a tool. That was it, It wasn't informing or making decisions on behalf of humanity. And they had reached that kind of climax of kind of that perfect balance between the two. So yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, and actually, the thought that came to my mind, another little teaser for another possible episode, looking at the Borg.
Right.
And how does AI that relate to AI? Yeah, exactly. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Leif, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank you all for joining us. I want to remind you, if you go over to thatnerdycatholic.com, you can sign up for our email list and get updates when we put out new episodes. If you go to thatnerdycatholic.com/merch, you can get Nerdy Catholic swag, t-shirts, mugs, and prints to show the world that you can be a nerd and a Catholic at the same time. And you can go to thatnerdycatholic.com/support to help support us financially. Our expenses here at That Nerdy Catholic have gone up recently, and any financial support you can give us would be greatly appreciated. You can send a one-off tip or join as a monthly supporter. I hope you can come back and join us next time as we dive deeper into questions of AI and ethics. But for now, have a good day and God bless.
Thank you, guys.
System shut down.